Hey, hey. Just as I was going to start recording this episode, I had a final thought looking at my notes, and I thought, who cares? Does this matter? This isn't even a big deal. What a stupid thing to be hung up on. If that's the worst of your problems, you haven't got a problem. But the whole point of this is to honor that regardless and to go ahead and talk about it. So here I am, going ahead and talking about it. Obviously, if something scars you for life, it's probably a big deal, Yeah, it could have been some horrific abuse, or it could have been something small, But does it matter? The result is the same. By that measure, all the people that were farmers, 2,000 years ago, dying at age 30 and living to, make food for themselves. Yeah, they could all look at everyone pretty much alive today and say, your problem is that it's Monday. That is your problem. Your problem is that your Instagram filter doesn't look good. That is your problem. Your problem is that your mother didn't like your drawing. That is your problem, So, perspective is relative. But this episode really should have been, I suppose, the first episode, essentially laying out the background to the general drive behind it. And as a preface, and I know I've got a million prefaces, suffixes, I like to go off on a tangent. That is basically my default way of talking, is just always on a tangent. I feel like I need to preface it because when I talk about my childhood and when I talk about my experiences, I know how difficult it is for someone listening to this to ignore this grown man voice, which I'm very, very proud of, by the way, but to ignore the grown man voice and to imagine the reality of what happened when I was a kid, which was not just being a child, but also being a girl. Imagine me as a girl, right? It's hard. It's hard. And I know my demeanor is very, it's very self conserved and well defended, verging on aggressive, verging on offensive. But you need to understand that this is the truth of what happened. And this is my background. As hard as it is to believe it, this is the truth of what happened. I did not think of myself as a quiet child. Not at all. Listen to me now. Did I always have something to say? You bet I did. But I guess none of the adults around me liked it very much. I suppose my insights and my comments too often altogether came across too uncomfortable, too triggering, I suppose, for them at the time, for whatever reason. It's impossible for me to really remember the specific conversations, but I was a kid. My understanding of things was relatively basic. So whatever I was saying would have been, how kids talk in simple terms. But of course, the simplest terms can be the strongest terms. And if the adults around them aren't quite able to deal with that, the easiest thing to do is try to shut them up and invalidate them. to make them feel ashamed of having said something that they have a problem with. So I was always very bewildered every time, and this happened quite often, every time, you know, a strange adult would come and see my parents, visit us, and talk to them primarily, but a lot of people want to engage with the children, they want to talk to them, maybe even on a sort of equal level, ask them a question and get an answer, and maybe treat them like grown-ups. And I was told to be quiet, so I would just be sat there. And eventually, all of these adults, without fail, would end up commenting the same question. Why so quiet? Why are you so quiet? Why is she so quiet? Some of them would put a positive spin to it. Oh, you're so well behaved. How come your kids are so well behaved? But mostly it was a negative spin. Why are you quiet? Why are you quiet? So quiet. And I didn't understand it. I thought, I'm not quiet. I'm just doing what I've been told to do, which is not say anything. It's not that I haven't got anything to say. I was offended that people would get this impression of me that I was shy and quiet, because I wasn't. But, you know, the sad thing is I became shy and quiet. I became shy and quiet. And I'm told that I have a self-censoring knee-jerk response to my own thoughts. I think a lot of people can relate to this. You have something pop into your head that you'd like to say. Something totally trivial. A comment here, a suggestion there, whatever. You know, you're not going to give a speech or anything like that. You just have something spontaneous that wants to come out of your mouth. And you just don't. You just don't. You just hold back. And I think that worked really well with my quite well-developed academic performance, because academia is about structure, and it's about planning, and it's about writing, and it's about in some ways limitations, and it's a good thing to think about something a million times before you write it down, and it's a good thing to spot all the issues and all the errors and constantly strive for better and be a bit anal about it. And so in that context, receiving high praise for my academic work made me feel very secure in myself and good about myself. And I never quite realized how damaged the other mode of communication, the spontaneous communication, the personal communication that's to do with you just being yourself. It's not a presentation or speaking, in a sort of detached way about some abstract stuff, but just the personal, deeply personal things that just spontaneously you would like to talk about, that I clearly developed such unhealthy barriers for. Limitations that were in no way positive. And I think that started most heavily, probably, with my dad. I never had a free-flowing relationship with him. And it was not just my speaking, my verbal contributions that were constantly shut down, constantly shamed in many situations. Again, reminder, as you're listening to this, picture a little girl. And I think that is relevant because a lot of the context to this, first of all, obviously my father treated me as his daughter rather than his son. And because of the, you know, gender-specific issues between him, you know, his own issues, and also between him and my mother and society at large, there were a lot of situations that were quite gendered, and he had a lot of negativity towards women and towards this sexual binary thing in itself. I know that if he'd seen me as his son, it would have been different. It could have been much worse in different ways. But it would have been different in a lot of these situations. And a lot of the... Another point that I wanted to make ages ago, actually, was that I'm also aware, you know, you're not aware of yourself. And then, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, if you're lucky, come to you and make the exact same point. They give you the same feedback. And you think, oh my goodness, it must be true. Something very personal about yourself that you genuinely were never aware of. And some of these comments that people have put towards me have been along the lines of sometimes offensive, sometimes very, very, very persuasive. Every single, and this is like, this is literally not an exaggeration, every single presentation that I've ever given has been received immensely positively. It's almost like I've got the Midas touch or something. So that's a good thing. But the bad side is, you know, a few people in personal exchanges have taken offense in a situation where I 0% thought that that could remotely even be a possibility. And so I realized that actually the way I was coming across in those situations, I was not aware of, you know? I actually couldn't even tell that that's what was happening. And so there's this bizarre irony of essentially ending up perpetuating the exact same negative energy that was passed on to me, despite myself having obviously been a victim of it. And I think a lot of trauma lives like that and is inherited like that. And it seems like a cliche, you know, the beaten up kid ends up being an abuser, and it seems like a very extreme sort of thing, but in subtle ways these things get passed down. And I think it's especially traumatic, probably both as a parent and as a child, to notice how the things that you're most terrified of in yourself, you've held on to them so tightly and you think no one noticed them, but then you have a kid and somehow, as a some sort of a ridiculous irony of life, they show the exact same behavior that you thought you ran away from. And it translates accurately across that generation. And it's scary. And it's a very disturbing realization as a child to think, actually, I see this in my parents. You know, I'm becoming my parents or something along those lines. I imagine probably far more disturbing the other way around, where you perhaps were hoping that your kid was going to save you, and then actually they end up being a bigger version of whatever demon you tucked away somewhere. And so my relationship with him was never good. And even now, as a grown up, you know, those patterns, those automatic behaviors and patterns of reactions and expectations and behaviors that are triggered by those people or those situations are still kicking in really hard. And sometimes I observe myself feeling like a kid, feeling like I'm waiting for validation. And I remember, I'm a grown-up. I don't need that. I shouldn't need that anymore, right? I try to snap myself out of it, but the fact that my gut response is still at that toddler stage is disturbing, you know? What on earth? So I try to at least be mindful of it. Even if I can't help it or I don't know what to do about it, at least I try to say, you know what, I'm noticing it, I'm aware of it. I can see it. I can see it happening. And so my dad used to, you know, lock himself up in the living room and smoke and shut the door to make sure the smoke didn't come out. But probably also for other reasons, I'm going to assume. So if I had to talk to him, which was mostly to ask for permission for various things that my mother did not have the authority to grant, which in itself was an issue, I would have to open the door. And ask for it. It would be really mundane things that should not have been made into such a big deal. You know, the big ask. The freaking dragon's den. You know? Is it okay if I go on this school trip? No. The answer was always no. I knew that, to be honest. Of course, 9 out of 10 is a no. So what do you think the 10th one is going to be? A no. And so I suppose partly that gut knowledge that it was going to be a no. But having to ask anyway. And essentially, I suppose, having something that really should be completely mundane turn into something ridiculously over the top. So I suppose now, every time I'm in a particular situation where it's, you know, it's an uncertain territory where I'm not with people that I'm close to, but you know, even when I am with people that I'm close to, that is still a thing. I would like to have a train of thought, a bit like I'm having here. But there's always something that feels greater than life. Oh, if I make this small comment, it's going to knock over a domino, and God knows what that could lead to. If I say this, if I'm just having some fun conversations in a social environment, if I just say this that I think is funny, And I am funny, you know, a lot of the time it is funny. And I'm so relieved and blessed when someone actually says that, because I feel, as a rare occasion, I feel understood. This person gets me. What a treat. How rare is this? My gut reaction before I say that thing that I'm hoping is going to be funny is, it's not worth it. Yeah, it could be funny, but if it's not funny, it's going to be really bad. And I suppose that's what I was thinking then, waiting behind that living room door, terrified of opening it. You know, this sounds like some sort of ridiculous metaphor. I swear this is not a metaphor. This is literally what happened. But life is stranger than fiction. If it's not funny, yeah, I suppose this could be the day that my dad finally just says, yeah, sure, why not? You don't have to ask me. But that was a pipe dream. One of those delusions they hold on to against all evidence to the contrary. And there is evidence to the contrary. I would wait behind that door like it was the most daunting thing in the world. I like to tell myself I was strong enough, that I wasn't put off, I wasn't anxious. It was fine. I was fine. It was fine. And I would peek over my shoulder to the clock on the wall in the kitchen. It would have been, you know, 5 past the hour. And I would tell myself, you know, it's fine. I'll take my time. I'll open the door when I'm ready. I'll give myself until 4:15. And then I will have done it by then. But until then, I can just give myself a minute to just become comfortable with it. Of course, the more you wait, the worse it gets. And so 4:15 would come and go. And then I thought, it's fine. Who cares about 4:15? We've got 5:30. We'll do it at 5:30. 5:30 would come and go. And I would just become paralyzed and more daunted. And sometimes, if it wasn't absolutely necessary, I would just walk away. And just think, it doesn't matter. It's fine. I don't need to do that. It doesn't matter. I'll find another way. I'll do it another time. It doesn't matter. And sometimes when I really, 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 really had to, I would open the door slowly, take the first breath of smoke, find him sitting on the sofa, sometimes with a deceiving smile. I thought this was going to be easy. I thought in that moment, seeing the smile, if the smile was there, oh, you know, this is no big deal. I don't know what I was freaking out over. This is great. Until, of course, he would immediately frown and say no the moment I spoke and said whatever I needed to say. Or it would begin with a frown before I even opened my mouth. And I'd think, okay, this is going to be hard. And I would ask my question, knowing the answer. No. Sometimes, since, you know, I was already there, how much worse could it get? I would insist. You know, why not? Please. Sometimes it would make no difference. It was still a no. My dad is shorter than me now. Sometimes, even the longest time frames seem faster than the time it takes to adjust this type of perspective. And I look at him now and I think, you know what? I feel sorry for him a lot of the time. I see myself, I'm a grown up. I've got nothing to be afraid of. So why do I still hesitate? I feel like that's a good ending. I was like, ooh, I should end it there. That's a nice ending. So yeah, this is the genesis, I suppose, of the good shit. The good shit. The good shit is all the good shit that little me had to say to those visiting friends of the family. All the good shit that really I had inside me waiting to come out. All the good shit. All the good shit that the friends I've had could see and appreciate. All the good shit that the acquaintances that just had a brief conversation with me have found in me, that they tell me I'm freaking hilarious. All the good shit. All the good shit. I'll catch you next time for more good shit.